What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Billie Jean King.
I have a saying that pressure's a privilege because I grew up dreaming about playing at Wimbledon, and I always try to ask myself, am I going to make pressure a friend or a foe?
The tennis champion, activist, and trailblazer.
She really is iconic. That's why she gets mentioned in the same vein with Muhammad Ali.
A conversation spanning the Olympics, her legacy of activism, and speaking up in sports.
Mental health right now with Naomi Osaka speaking up and Simone Biles during the Olympics. I think it's good that we own it and we speak about it.
Plus the rest of the news that got us squawking, Johnson & Johnson's making moves, and dancing humans dressed like robots, just another day at Tesla.
This is the P.T. Barnum part of the job that Elon Musk is a master at.
It's Friday, August 20th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Melissa Lee along with Joe Kernan. Becky and Andrew are off today. That was not a real robot, by the way, in case you're wondering out there.
Johnson & Johnson, because of that company's vaccine, it's a one-shot vaccine that had lower efficacy, but effectiveness, but it was just one shot. But there's a CEO shakeup, and I think of this guy's fairly young, but he's been there a while at Johnson & Johnson. Alex Gorsky is going to transition to an executive chairman role on January 3rd. He said in a statement that it's the right time as he focuses more on his family due to some family health reasons. He served as CEO for 9 years, and Vice Chairman Joaquin Duato will take over as CEO. He led the company's pharmaceutical business before becoming a deputy of Gorsky. He'll also be appointed to the company's board. And Gorsky, Alex, has been a friend of the show, and I think his 9-year tenure will be viewed favorably given some of his predecessors and some of the myriad issues under the last guy. I go all the way back to Ralph.
I don't have as good a memory as you, Joe.
Yeah,
but the stock is up about 170% since Gorsky took over as CEO, which is pretty good there.
This dance performance was part of Tesla's official AI day last night. And for those of you listening, I'll paint a word picture for you. We're looking at a lone dancer in a skin-tight suit doing some funky dance moves. I would hurt myself to techno music. The suit is all white, and it's got a black hood and opaque black face mask, but pretty clear it's a human. Elon Musk watches from the wings with his arms folded before thanking the dancer who walks off stage. Let's get to Phil LeBeau for a full rundown. Number one, if there is an actual prototype, it's smaller than that, right? I mean, the one that they're actually talking about, Phil, years in the future, is like only 5'5", 120 pounds, and doesn't look anything like that.
5'8", 125 pounds. Yeah.
Okay.
5'8", 125 that thing, pounds. But that was a heck of a performance, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know if you like dancing. I can't unsee Elon Musk dancing, and I don't think I'm going to be able to unsee this dancing. But my question, and my very serious question to you, Phil, and, you know, he's a science fiction buff and talked about universal basic income being necessary when we do have robots.
Right.
How many years away from an AI robot actually being able to do those moves? Because I've seen these dolls.
Is necessary in society to have a robot that can dance really poorly.
But if you could have something that's that agile, I think that's years
that
and years and years and years away. But we have seen those dogs, Phil, that look like exactly like if you saw the War of the Worlds series, the real thing looks just like the monsters in there. So how many years would you say, Phil?
Joe, how many times have we seen Boston Scientific put out a demonstration video of a robot of some fashion dancing and moving and, you know, I wouldn't say acting, but mimicking the same actions as a human? So I think that the technology, to a certain extent, is already there. I think the real question becomes, A, how useful is this? Can it be replicated on a wider scale? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Do you guys want me to first go over what happened with AI Day and then talk about the plan for a humanoid bot? Okay, so we'll get the news out of the way. What did we say yesterday? This was going to be a presentation if you were really wonky, if you're into software, if you're into artificial intelligence. This was your kind of event. They basically laid out how they want to use artificial intelligence to improve autopilot and autonomous driving. And look, some of the, what they demonstrated and what they talked about is pretty impressive. It makes you feel like, yes, they're on the right path here. Remember, they are only at level 2 autonomy. They're nowhere close to level 4 autonomy, let alone level 5, where you just get in the car, it goes, there is no reaction at all. There's no steering wheel, nothing at all. Tesla is developing a chip for training AI networks. Its next AI training computer will be 10 times the performance of the current one. And then at the end of this, and we said this yesterday, that he would use this event as a recruiting tool. Oh, they were flat out saying, come work at Tesla. And who wouldn't? If you're into this, you would look at this demonstration and you'd say, oh, now this is pretty cool. They're going to build a humanoid bot, and that's the plan. They plan to build it. It is expected to be ready next year, about 5'8". What, it can carry up to 45 pounds. The weight will be 125 pounds. It can lift 150 pounds. Here's Elon Musk talking about the humanoid bot and why they built it.
It's basically going to start with just dealing with work that is boring, repetitive, and dangerous. Basically, what is the work that people would least like to do?
And by the way, I said that why they built it, why they plan to build it. Again, it is not yet built. He says it'll be ready by next year. Keep in mind, in the past, he has said next year would be the deadline in the past for certain things like a million robo-taxis. That never happened. So whether or not we see this in some fashion in the next year, guys, is going to be interesting to see. But let's be honest. This is the P.T. Barnum part of the job that Elon Musk is a master at. If you were into this, if you were thinking, I want to do artificial intelligence work, if you saw this demonstration, you'd immediately be reaching out to somebody at Tesla saying, I'm your guy or I'm your girl, whatever you want to say. And Tesla would be interested in hearing from you. And that's part of what happened last night. It was a recruiting pitch.
I knew it was a human, A. I knew, number two, it definitely wasn't me because of the, and I knew it wasn't you, LeBeau, to be honest. There's no way, unless they had some kind of like titanium type reinforcements there. So I knew that. Yesterday we had a guy who, Phil, I know you've probably gotten some Twitter, but whenever we have Gordon Johnson on, we get all this
Twitter
feedback. And he made the point that you made. He went over like five other times where there were, upcoming developments that Elon Musk has talked about. And Gordon said it's 0-5. So why do you believe anything that comes out?
My question is, why should we believe anything that's going to be said at AI Day 2 when all the prior days were defined by complete fabrications or something close?
That's a little harsh, obviously, because it is what he's done is unbelievable.
Right. And Gordon was suggesting that Elon Musk is pretty much making this stuff up and trying to pull one over on people. I know you had Gene Munster on right afterwards and he said, look, has he been 0-5 in some of these things that they've promised in terms of when they would hit the deadline? Yes. But they have made advancements in many areas, in part because they have set these goals.
We don't hear Autonomy Day from Ford and GM and from Toyota. I think that it is safe to say is that Tesla continues to advance faster than other car companies and should be rewarded on valuation.
But in terms of if you listen to him and he says, we're going to do this by this date, he's even said it in the past, Joe. He has said, look, I'm not that great with these expectations. It's what I would like us to do. But in reality, he even knows that when he has set out some of these deadlines, it's not going to happen.
If he took that off, do you think underneath would be one of the blue men from that group or something, or maybe from it wasn't him because he's a heavier sit guy. What about Daft Punk? I'm told Daft Punk has a similar look.
Joe, my son 1 year for Halloween, my son went in a morph suit trick or treating. It's around this house somewhere. I may put it on.
That would be the best.
I'm thinking, you know, slasher films never go out of style. That's a pretty scary looking thing there. And remember, I mean, they did the Edvard Munch scream mask. They made six movies after someone thought, hey, this would be good to have a serial killer with that scream mask on. So you can go a long way.
But this robot is built to be friendly, and that it's a robot that you can actually outrun.
Yes.
You can outrun this robot just in case.
You remember the Asimov? You remember what? There's
top speed is 5 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Just saying it's supposed to be safe does not guarantee an AI thing is going to be safe, because they don't need us once they get really good at what they're doing.
Once the AI is really
They don't need protoplasm and feeding things and excrement. All the things that we do are...
We're weak.
And when they really get in charge, and Musk is, you know, greasing the skids towards our eventual, probably, obsolescence. But, Phil, thank you. Speak for yourself, right? Obsolescence, maybe I know from where I speak, but from whence I speak. But the future is daunting as we hurtle towards it. Maybe we should have thought about genetic engineering a little bit, too.
Next
on Squawk Pod, icon, champion, trailblazer, Billie Jean King. How she broke barriers in tennis and laid the foundation for women athletes everywhere.
All of us in our 20s were willing to forego our careers for the future generations. And the three considerations were that any girl in the world, if she's good enough, would have a place to compete. Number two, we would be appreciated for our accomplishments, not only our looks. And number three, finally, to make a living playing tennis.
Plus, a conversation you'll only hear on this podcast with our own Joe Kernan, Billie Jean superfan.
Do you want to record all this, or what do you want to do?
I'm recording.
Oh, you are? Okay, good.
All that right after this.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin spoke this week to sports icon and 39-time Grand Slam tennis champion Billie Jean King. She's written a memoir about her pioneering life in sports and beyond. And after the show, I heard a rumor that for Joe,
this meeting is being recorded.
Talking to Billie Jean King was emotional, really emotional.
All right, so what do we got to do?
So I had to investigate.
Did you see broadcast news?
Of course, yeah.
So you think I'm like William Hurt, that Billie Jean, she affects me so much that she makes me, you know, that, you remember he conjured up a tear, but it was after he had already done the thing. So mine was live. Mine was live because I know, you know, I was, do you want to record all this or what do you want to do?
I'm recording. Yeah.
You are?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So what do you want to know?
Billie Jean King exploded onto popular culture with the Battle of the Sexes, a much-publicized tennis exhibition match nearly 50 years ago, pitting her against a former champion, Bobby Riggs. This material is from the NBC News archives. Riggs, dancing in a kick line with cheerleaders and sweaters spelling out his name. And he and 29-year-old Billie Jean answered questions from the press.
She can do everything on the tennis court better than I can, but I don't think that she can stand up to the stress, the strain, and for the big match.
Oh, Billie, do you mean to say you think I put women down? Is that what you're saying I'm doing all the time?
Yes, I do. I don't think you give us credit for having any brains at all.
She sits politely, actually, in front of about a dozen 1970s microphones and flashing cameras.
Well, I get along very well with a lot of girls.
It's September 1973. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. I remembered it. I was one of the 90 million. I didn't remember why. I mean, I thought it was a given that Billie Jean now would win. I didn't remember that he had beaten Margaret Court.
Margaret Court, yeah.
Not that prior. So it was not a slam dunk that Billie Jean was going to be. Was he also a Wimbledon winner? I think he also won Wimbledon. Is that true?
Yeah, his career in the 30s and 40s was huge.
He's a pretty good tennis player. So so to take that on with you know, the entire feminist world basically on your shoulders, I think that was more of the same pressure. Plus, you know, he was a male chauvinist pig. He said that
they know, as I know, and as Billie Jean knows, that there's no way a woman can play tennis with a good man tennis player.
I mean, he was a total pig. I mean, that was the kind of stuff that went on back then. So, you know, we've come a long way, maybe. And, you know, he derided her and made fun of her. And he was everything a male chauvinist pig was thought to be back then. So there was a lot of drama. It was a great, you know, thing to be able to, for the media to be able to promote and sell. And it's the biggest, I mean, more people watch that than any sporting event in history.
Some people in professional tennis are mortified at the circus atmosphere surrounding this match. But all the hoopla has done one thing. It has gotten a lot of people watching tennis. George Lewis, NBC News, Houston.
I don't like to get into age and experience and wisdom and everything, but in my lifetime, there were separate lunch counters in the South. So when Billie Jean was coming through all these things, there were a lot of cultural and societal things happening. It was the 60s and 70s. And I thought of her, I guess, as just a really tough-minded tennis pro and watched everything she went through and didn't realize the personal struggles that she was facing. And I guess when you go through so much adversity, and she did, and if you reach, there were times where she was unable to stand up for what she believed because there was money involved and there were sponsors involved. You know, she admits that she didn't feel comfortable with who she was till she was in her 50s. So you can imagine the struggles through her 20s, through her 30s, through her 40s. And yet she was still able, you know, to be one of the greatest tennis players of all time. She really is iconic. That's why she gets mentioned in the same vein with Muhammad Ali, or, you know, that's where sports can transcend everything else. And, you know, just become a really important, I don't know, it moved society forward. It moved all of us forward.
Stand by, Joe. Up on the cue.
Live sports have come a long way back from the depths of the pandemic last year, but the Delta COVID variant is now a big concern. Leagues and organizers, for everyone. We just saw a Summer Olympics without spectators. And late last week, the U.S. Tennis Association reversed its decision to allow full capacity at the U.S. Open, which starts later this month. Fans will now be banned from the tournament's qualifying rounds. Join us now to talk about that and so many other things. Former tennis pro sports icon Billie Jean King. Her new memoir is called All In, an autobiography. Billie Jean, thanks for joining us. And we're going to talk about things that, other than COVID, but that is front and center for a lot of us. I still am trying to figure out who the other 99 people in the last 100 or in the last century were as influential as you. But that's really something, being one of the most influential people of the century. And I wouldn't disagree with that. Who are the others?
Many others. I don't know. You talking about Life magazine? I do know there were no presidents mentioned.
No,
which was not good. Yeah. But the others, there was about two or three other athletes, Muhammad Ali, and Jackie Robinson. I think those are the other two.
So we are in a world where, in the Olympics, some athletes said that they found it difficult to perform at their best level without the, without the excitement of the fans watching this. Do you think it would matter for you if you were playing today, if you were playing tennis in an empty stadium?
Oh, it makes a huge difference, but you have to wrap your brain around it if you're going to be an athlete. I mean, that's your job as a professional athlete. We are entertainers. I know what I would do. I'd wrap my mind around everyone all over the world watching. I'd really try to bring that in as if they're there with me. But everyone's different. Every athlete's different, as you well know, every person. But it's been difficult, but we're trying to worry about safety. And also, there's media contracts. You know, media content is huge. It's a huge revenue stream. Also, there's gaming, betting. So there's a lot of income streams coming in when you do actually have these matches happen, or in any of the other sports. I mean, we really depend on that money for the sport. So it's vital that these athletic contests happen. I did love watching the Olympics, I must say, this year. I loved it. I thought it just was fantastic. And for tennis, it was great because they kept it on one channel. I think it was the Olympic channel, which I thought was so helpful.
So many things in your life that I want to talk about. I'm looking for the exact quote, but that are in your memoirs. And one of the quotes that struck me was that back when you started, you were living the world that you wanted didn't exist at that time. The world that you wanted to live in.
It still doesn't.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Does it exist now? We've come a long way, baby, from Virginia. Remember the old ads for Virginia Slims?
Yes,
which was the tour that started with your nine or eight colleagues that really put ladies tennis on the map. We've come away, but we've come a long way. We have a long way still to go. And a lot of it is due to you, Billie Jean, that you've changed and helped move us along, but not to where we need to be.
Well, you brought up a very important thing that happened in 1970 when you said eight other colleagues and I were called the original nine. We were just inducted to the International Tennis Hall of Fame. We're the first group ever to be inducted. They usually do not do that. And that was the birth of women's professional tennis. And what made it so significant is that all of us in our 20s were willing, and some, actually a couple of teenagers, I think, were willing to forego our careers for the future generations. And the three considerations were that any girl in the world, if she's good enough, would have a place to compete. Number two, we would be appreciated for our accomplishments, not only our looks. And number three, finally, to make a living playing tennis that we love so much. And we'd all come from amateur tennis a few years before that, where we were making $14 a day. So that was really important. And then also getting equal prize money in the majors, and the Grand Slam was really important to us because we were getting a different percentages, probably like 30 to 40% of what the guys were getting. They were getting rid of events, so we really needed to step up. And we did finally get equal prize money in 2007 in all four. The U.S. Open, which is coming up soon, was the first one in 1973. So we're really, really lucky that we finally did that. So women's tennis is in the leadership. And you look at the different, Forbes magazine, every year, the women, the top 10 money makers are always women tennis players. I think they finally had a soccer player this year at number 10. So we've been leading forever, but we want to uplift all the other women's sports to get equal pay for equal work and type of thing. So soccer's trying very hard, but we need more sports for women. I mean, let's just face it, baseball, American football, NHL, there's nothing for women yet.
You say we're not there yet. One of the other points you make in your memoirs is that each generation has work to do, a continuation of what the last generation did. So we have made progress in racial issues, in issues.
We've made progress. Yes.
In LGBT issues and all these things. But you point out then the next generation has to take the progress it's made and then take it even further. And we're seeing that happen right now.
Well,
I mean, you must think it's a lot better.
Coretta Scott King has a wonderful, there's so many struggles, and I'm not saying it exactly, but freedom is never really won. You have to earn it and win it in every generation. So that's why Black Lives Matter, all these, it's so important that everyone continue to fight for freedom and fight for representation by everyone.
Becky?
Hey, Billie Jean, it's Becky. I just wanted to ask you, hi, it's great to see you. I just wanted to ask you about that tournament with Bobby Riggs. Like, how much did it worry you? What would have happened if you didn't win? Did that weigh on you, or did you not think about it at the time?
Oh, no. It weighed on me tremendously. That's probably one of the reasons I won the match, because of that thought that if I do lose, what's going to happen? Because we'd just gotten Title IX passed in 1972, which was the first time that schools, that private, public, high schools, universities, colleges, finally, when they received federal funds, they finally, for the first time, had to spend it equally on men and women. And also before that, we had classroom quotas for women. If you wanted to be get your doctorate at Harvard, they only allowed 5% of the classroom to be women. The reason the women win so much at the Olympics is because of Title IX. We finally got athletic scholarships for the first time after 1972 when I played Bobby Riggs. We couldn't even get a credit card on our own still. So I had a lot on my mind. Also, women's tennis is only in our third year of professional women's tennis. So I didn't want that to go south, and I didn't want the men's tennis and to go south either. So I just really, really had all that on my mind. I knew it was about social change. I knew it wasn't about tennis. It was about social change. So that's why it was so important. But what happened is that you couldn't get on a tennis court after that match, which our game just exploded after that match.
That's amazing. 90 million people. So, Billie Jean, we need you to. I want you to weigh in on a lot of things, and the Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka situation. And I know that you, like everybody, had to think it through. These are complex issues. I also wish we had time to talk about Renee Richards and trans, because you dealt with something long ago, and in the book you talk about how after it was all said and done, everybody was glad that Renee Richards was able to play the women's circuit, was able to, she's a great lady, and after the decision was made to include her, people were happy about it across the board in tennis. So can we translate that to how to handle this today? You have the answers for this, for these things?
Dr. Renee Richards was phenomenal, and she was a transgender woman, and we were the first to have a transgender woman on our tour in any sport, and it was a great education for me, and she's a great friend and my ophthalmologist still. She's retiring soon, but it translates into everything. Mental health right now with Naomi Osaka speaking up and Simone Biles during the Olympics. Simone did the right thing because it helped her help the U.S. team win medals, and she was very courageous, I think, to talk about it, and Naomi has been. We do have to address it, because you listen right now during COVID, more youth are having challenges, they're depressed, things are not right. So I think it's good that we own it and we speak about it, because when you own something, your feelings, like if I can, the book, it talks about me having an eating disorder, it talks about my sexuality challenges and the emotional challenges I had. When you can really talk about it and have people share in it, it does help. And also to take ownership of whatever you're feeling is very, very important.
So, Jean, how do you think about balancing the issue of mental health and being a great performer? And the reason I'm asking it that way is because in many ways, a great athlete, when you put on a great performance on the court, it is about effectively being able to tune out the distraction, being able to tune out the noise and tune out what might ostensibly be described as mental health issues that we all confront.
Yes, but I think it's good we confront them, because I think we have a platform in sports. But I always try to think about, I have a saying that pressure is a privilege, because I grew up dreaming about playing at Wimbledon, and I always try to ask myself, am I going to make pressure a friend or a foe? And we are performers, we are athletes, but we're really performers, we entertain, we're part of the entertainment world. And I think as we're growing up, it's really important that we have rookie schools that explain the challenges, because part of our job is to speak to the media. The media, without the media, for instance, women's tennis would not be where it's at. We would not be getting the money that we're earning without the media, and that means traditional media as well as social media. But we need both. And I know when I used to sit in the room after every match and talk to them, most of the time they're only guys, but eventually we had more and more women. But I always thought that each person there, this is their job. So we're all helping each other have a job and make a living. And we're in this together. That's why I've always approached the media. I think I've always thought that you can either make them a friend or a foe. And I love writers anyway, and I love people who write. And so I always got along well with them, but I spent a ton of time getting to know them as human beings. But we're really all in this together. So I, I, I would try to get athletes to understand, if you want to be a performer, if you want to be a professional athlete, then this is what goes, this are the obligations that go with it. And it's not easy, but, and maybe there's a different way we should approach it now. And I think I always listen when young people speak, because they're the next generation of leaders, and to make change, and how do we want to make positive change? There's, you know, we've got climate issues, we've got all kinds of issues. So this mental illness, I think it's important we address it. I think it's good we're talking about it. I don't know if there's a different way to do it, but I used to always take at least 5 minutes. I used to say, I can't talk to anybody for 5 minutes. Throw my rackets across the locker room or whatever. Tell everybody to get out. But then, you know, at five, you know, after 5, 10 minutes, then you just, okay, I'm ready to go do my job with the media.
Billie Jean, there's stuff in the book. We take it for granted, all the things that you went through. We don't remember the environment. I mean, there were still separate lunch counters in my lifetime. So we don't remember what you went through and how difficult it was for you. And you didn't always, maybe you weren't always as, looking back as, there were times where you probably thought, I wish I had even been more trying, but no one could have done better and has done more for all these things. And I just, having looked through the book, it's, I wish we could talk more about that. We have breaking news and we got to go and it's past 8:30.
But thank you.
But please have a, come back on. And I'd like, because you had to struggle. You had to struggle, and you're the, who you are now is a product of just, of an unbelievable a victory over all those struggles. So it's great
to have
you.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
And that's Squawk Pod for today, and it's Friday, so for the week, Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Thank you to Melissa Lee for sitting in to talk about today's top stories. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, would you be so kind to give us a rating or write a review? You can do it right in the app. That's it. Have a good weekend, and we'll meet you back here on Monday.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.